from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Judy Blume raised me, so said one of my colleagues yesterday about the iconic author of coming-of-age books like Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. They're stories about the everyday anxieties of adolescence, from getting a boyfriend to getting your period. This morning on Forum, Judy Blume and her son, filmmaker Lawrence Blume, join us. They just finished a film adaptation of Blume's book Tiger Eyes. We'll talk about the movie, Blume's extraordinary career, and yes, the origins of that famous adolescent girl mantra, I must, I must, I must increase my bust. Next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. If you grew up in the late 70s, the 80s or 90s, chances are there was one author who helped you navigate adolescence and coming of age, Judy Blume. And so yesterday, when we posted on our website and Facebook page that Judy Blume would be among our guests this morning on Forum, we quickly got comments like this. Colleen wrote, somehow she captured how a tween soul feels and wants. Shannon added, oh, Judy, how did you get in my head as a kid? And then there was this from Sandy. Her book stayed with me, spoke to a scared preteen like no one else could. I didn't really have a mom, so I'll always be grateful for the lady behind those pages. This morning on Forum, the lady behind those pages joins us along with her son, filmmaker Lawrence Blume. Together, they've just finished a film adaptation of Blume's book, Tiger Eyes. Surprisingly, the first time one of Blume's iconic stories has been adapted for the big screen. It will be shown this weekend as part of the Jewish Film Festival in San Francisco, and they are in town here in San Francisco for that purpose. Judy Blume's books, of course, include Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Then Again, Maybe I Won't, Deanie, and Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing, which was dedicated to her son, Lawrence. Lawrence Blume and Judy Blume join us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy to have you both here. Let's begin by the story of Tiger Eyes. And first, if you would, before we get into the story itself, why it has been so until now that a story has been brought to the screen?
Oh, I wish I had a simple answer for that. I don't know. I mean, years and years of Judy, we'd like to do something. What should we do? And it never panned out. I always wanted someone to come to me with the passion. This is what I want to do. Let's do it. And then I would have said, yes, let's do it. I'm glad I'm still around to see it. So I'm happy.
And why this story in particular, Judy and then Lawrence, on the story? This is the story of a young girl whose father is tragically murdered in Atlantic City, runs a convenience store, sandwich shop. And it's the story of what happens to her next, going out to New Mexico with relatives. Her mom is sort of dysfunctional at that point. Story of loss and discovery and so many of the themes you often write about. What was it about this story that you thought would bring that passion to the screen?
Well, I always knew that this is the one that could be a movie, but it's really Larry's choice. You know, we had someone come to us and say, we would like to adapt one of your books for the screen. Which one would you like to do? And we'd like to do it with Larry. So he could probably answer that better than I can.
Larry Blume.
Why this one? Well, there of all of Judy's books, there are two that I've always wanted to do, Summer Sisters and Tiger Eyes. And I didn't feel ready to do Summer Sisters. It's also a much bigger kind of epic story. And Tiger Eyes has been floating around my head since I read it when I was on my way to college a long time ago. And it was personal to me, even though the story it's fiction. Thematically, it was personal, and I always felt close to it. And wanted to explore it on film someday and then forgot about it until these people showed up and thought, well, gee, maybe this is the right time to try it.
Personal, I know, to both of you and for different reasons. Personal to you in part because the story involves a girl, a teenager, traveling to New Mexico after the loss of her father. For you, it was also traveling to New Mexico after your mom and dad's divorce.
Yeah. I was a little bit younger, but we did. I grew up in New Jersey, and then suddenly we're on our way to New Mexico, to Los Alamos, New Mexico, and had to start all over again. So sort of torn away from family, from friends, from everything geographically I knew. And so I always related to Davy's journey, even though she's dealing with death, the sense of loss.
But it's interesting because you fell in love with New Mexico, mm-hmm. did you not?
Yes, I did.
You fell in love with the beauty and, I mean, it was like your soul was always in New Mexico after that. And, I mean, New Mexico is a major part of this story. It becomes a character in the story. Just as in Summer Sisters, I mean, Martha's Vineyard is a very strong character. You know, I too moved to New Mexico after 37 years living in New Jersey. So it was a huge change and adventure and a very difficult time in my life and yet a time of great discovery. I didn't even know that till I just said it, but I think it's true after hearing you say that. That was true for me too. And also, of course, I really don't think I was aware of this when I was writing the book, although you might say to me, how can that possibly be true? I was a young woman. I was 21, but I was a girl who tragically and suddenly lost her beloved father. I mean, my father was my everything. And I was with him, sitting on the floor, just the way Davy is sitting on the floor with my father when he, you know, suddenly died. And you never get over that loss. You move on, but you never forget. Just as Davy says in the movie, I'll never forget you.
And I can hear in the motion in your voice, how coming back to this story written now over 30 years ago, right, brings all of that discovery and emotion back yet again.
You know, every time I see this movie, well, it's just like the book. I mean, my body must be whatever you call it, when, you know, you just have the same reaction every time you see it. I can open the book to a certain page and I will get very emotional. But I've seen this movie so many times, and I know everything that's coming. I know it. I like to see it with audiences at festivals. I've seen it. And it's the same thing. There are certain scenes. There's certain dialogue. There are those moments when it's just become so emotional.
Well, let's listen to one short moment from the film and then talk more about the resonance of it and the kinds of themes that you have written about and now have been brought to the screen. Lawrence Bloom, set it up for us, if you will. This is now the point in which Davy, the young 15-year-old girl, has come to New Mexico. She's feeling lost and apart from everything. And she meets someone and describe the scene that we're about to listen to just a little bit of.
Well, she slips and falls and climbing down into a canyon and ends up meeting a young Native American guy who at first she's afraid of and then they become friendly. But in this scene, after she's sent to a new school and feels very uncomfortable, leaves school and goes back to that canyon to look for this guy and ends up finding Wolf climbing. And he's the only thing at that point in the story that she looks forward to and gives her hope. And so she goes looking for him and finds him.
Okay, let's listen to a little bit of this clip and the exchange between these two characters.
See those caves? The Table people lived in them 800 years ago. My ancestors.
Your ancestors?
Yeah. Now that part of my family lives on a pueblo 30 miles that way.
All I know about my family is my great-grandmother lived in Atlantic City in a boarding house. Uh-huh. Like 2,000 miles that way.
I think you mean that way.
Right. That way.
You have a lot in common.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, get yourself a decent pair of climbing shoes and I'll take you up there.
Wait, to the caves?
You have a bright smile, Tiger. With sad eyes. You want to talk about it?
No.
Okay.
Maybe someday, but just not right now.
Yeah. Never.
An excerpt from the new film Tiger Eyes. Screenplay by Lawrence Bloom and Judy Bloom, directed by Lawrence Bloom. It will be at the Castro this Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock as part of the Jewish Film Festival. And you'll both be there as well, right?
We will, yes. We'd love to meet everybody who comes.
That moment that we hear when Davy, who Wolf refers to as Tiger, and we can probably describe that at some point within our conversation about that name, but where she says, not now, but maybe someday. Is that really at the heart of what you try to delve into in your stories, Judy Bloom? What's really going on and the ability to play that out, whether that's inside or someday in conversation?
You know, my son would tell you that I'm the least analytical person he's ever met, and I don't understand exactly how all of this works. I could go back, you know, and try to analyze it. But when it comes from some other place deep inside. It comes spontaneously, and I never think about what does this mean, mm-hmm. and I only, you know, I can look at it or read it later and wonder, and I'm talking about 40 years later, and wonder, how did I do that? How did I know that? Because I have no idea how this process works. I'm only grateful that it still works. And so I try not to go there. Like, what am I trying to do? I'm trying to tell the best story I can tell. And the only thing I really like to write is I like to invent characters and put them into relationships. And I also like, you know, that what you're thinking isn't always what you're saying. You're saying something, you're thinking something else, you're wondering something else. And that's hard to do in a movie when, you know, Larry always says that this book is written in the first person, you're inside her head, and how he had to try to do that in a movie.
And so much of adolescence plays inside, but doesn't necessarily play in the spoken word. So what sort of challenge was that to you as a filmmaker, Lawrence Bloom, to take that sort of painful interior mishmash of emotion and thought and somehow make that visual and verbal?
Mm. Well, I have a pretty good sense memory of my own experiences. So what was painful, going to new schools, trying to make new friends, meeting people. But the challenge in this adaptation was trying to figure out how to turn this internal monologue into actionable drama. And I think it was just trying to understand what was happening in every scene. This is the analytical part that we talk about. Trying to understand what happens in every scene, what it's about. And then turn it into something that you can both see visually and hear the characters relate to each other about.
But, you know, I mean, we were incredibly lucky because Willa Holland, who plays Davy, she just naturally has that emotion and expression on her face. Her face is the most beautiful, expressive face, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we had very little time to cast this movie, and I think we were fortunate in many of our decisions and some of our non-decisions, like with the little boy who plays her brother. I just can't believe what a natural child he is on screen.
Again, Tiger Eyes is the new film by Lawrence Bloom and Judy Blume. It will be part of the Jewish Film Festival at the Castro this Sunday, 3:55 in the afternoon on Sunday. They'll both be there as well. You know, I can't help but think about the scene and of the death of Davy's father, the gun violence, and think about the events of this morning and the horrific events unfolding in Colorado this morning. And the conversations that may or may not be taking place yet in Colorado this morning. I wonder if you're thinking about that, Judy Blume, and about what ought be said in that sort of circumstance.
You know, I didn't know about it until we're jet-lagged. We flew from New York to San Francisco and got here yesterday. And until I read that downstairs when I came into the studio, I didn't know. I didn't have a TV or a radio on in my room this morning. I, you know, was tweeting. I didn't read anything about it. So it's shocking. It was shocking to me. We just saw that downstairs. One thing I do know when I wrote this book, I remember this, is that we always see or saw, because I wrote it a long time ago, the violent crime. But we never, that never started the story. And then the story is really about what happens to those who are left, what happens to the family. And that was what I was trying to write about. And I'm sure that this story is just, it's just horrific, the idea of it.
Judy Blume and Lawrence Bloom are guests this hour. We're going to open up our phone lines early because we know there are so many of you who would like to talk about not only this film and what it is like and that story, but all the other work of Judy Blume's extraordinary career as well. Here's the number, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can email us at forum@kqed.org, or you can go to our Facebook page or website, as many of you already have, and post your comments and thoughts there. Here's some comments that are coming in right now. Kelly writes, Tiger Eyes was always my favorite, but I just finished rereading Forever. It was my first experience with literary erotica. Rachel says, Forever, it was naughty. Monica writes, Forever, it was like all teenagers. So a number of people are mentioning that book as well. Kimberly says, thank you, Ms. Blume. I had the most awesome childhood because of you. Andrea shares, just as long as we're together was inseparable from my youth. Kelly, are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. That was the one that for me will always be a classic. Why do you think it is that so many people go right back to those particular books and those particular thoughts and moments?
I love my readers, and they've given me everything, but I can't tell you. Why? I don't know. You know, when you start to write, I had my little, my oh, please, you know, just let me be published. Oh, please, just let me be published. And then you get a little greedier and you say, oh, I hope somebody will read what I write. And then a little greedier, I hope someday I'll hear from somebody who reads. But never in my wildest fantasies, and I had a lot of fantasies in those days, did I think that it would be like this.
Well, let me ask you, Lawrence Bloom, what do you think it is that resonates so directly? With boys, I should say, as well as girls.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are universal experiences with teenagers, questions, things you feel uncomfortable about, things you can't even talk to your friends about, but they're all kind of bubbling inside you. And I think she has an incredible ability to channel those emotions into very entertaining stories, but in a way that makes you feel like you're not emotionally alone at that age and that you're normal for feeling those things. And mm-hmm. I think there's so many parents who don't talk to their kids about the important things in life, and because they're embarrassed, shy, uncomfortable. And so I've had so many people say to me, oh, my God, your mother raised me. And I guess
probably
in some
better
way,
than I raised my kids. I probably raised the ones who read the books. You know, everybody says, oh, if only you had been my mother. Oh, if only you had been my mother, life would have been perfect. And I write back and say, no, it doesn't work that way.
Is it about, do you think, in part, and why people keep coming back to these moments, is because it gave you permission to feel a particular way and that you weren't the only one? It's this whole question of, oh, I'm not the only one who's going through this. Let me just read this one brief from Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, where her constant worry is about whether or not her breasts are going to grow and whether or not she'll ever get her period. And she writes one of her, there are these little recurring prayers, and she says, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Life is getting worse every day. I'm going to be the only one who doesn't get it, meaning her period. I know it, God, just like I'm the only one who doesn't have religion. Why can't you help me? Haven't I always done? Why can't I be like everybody else?
Yeah, well, I was a lot like Margaret, I have to say. And Sally J. Friedman is my most autobiographical book. So both Sally and Margaret have these relationships with God, and Sally makes bargains to keep her beloved father safe, which is interesting when you think about Tiger Eyes, you know, that really at age 9, the burden that I felt that it was up to me to keep my father safe because he was traveling back and forth, and his brothers had died at 42, and now he was 42, and it was a huge burden on the shoulders of a child to feel responsible, you know, and of course never shared those feelings. It was between me and God.
And there's this intriguing continuum of everything from God keep my father safe to let me good grades to let me have my period, right? I mean, they're all part of that.
All different dialogue. Books, yes. And there we are in Tiger Eyes, and she didn't make those bargains.
Let's hear from some of our listeners before we go to our break. Eric, get us started. Eric joins us from Guerneville this morning. Eric, go ahead.
Hi, Judy and Lawrence. You probably don't remember me. My name's Eric Keller. I was Bill Keller's son. Tom Kitchens worked for him in Los Alamos. And he lived in Santa Cruz, and I know there are several times when you were down to visit. And Judy, you are an inspiration. I came out in college about being gay, which, as you can recall, in Los Alamos was not a terribly welcome thing. And I spent a good part of the 80s doing volunteer work with AIDS patients. And Tiger Eyes really was the basis for a lot of that. And you're an inspiration. I need to go back and reread it. My partner just passed away a couple months ago from AIDS. But you give so much strength, and the power of working with terminally ill people is you just give wonderful words to it and to New Mexico.
Eric, thank you. Thanks for sharing that story with us. Just a brief reaction from either of you, and then we have to go to our break.
Thank you, Eric, and I'm sorry for your loss. I just have to say that when we shot the movie, we went back to Los Alamos. It was the first time I had been back since I left. I thought I could never go back there. It was a difficult time in my life. And I found it to be a very moving experience. And I actually went to a school and talked to the children and the teachers. And I thought, well, these are lovely people. You know, what was I so afraid of? Why couldn't I come back here?
Eric, thanks for the call. We'll rejoin our conversation with Judy Blume and Lawrence Blume when we return. Again, here's the number, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org, or you can share your thoughts on our Facebook or website, and talk some, too, about what you remember about that time in adolescence or coming of age, the sense of loss or discovery, and the kinds of things you might like Judy Blume to write about today. What are those interior dialogues going on that still need to be conversed between parent and child? 866-733-6786. This is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our guests this hour, Judy Blum and her son Lawrence Blum, the filmmaker. They have collaborated to bring one of Judy Blum's novels to the screen, Tiger Eyes. It's part of the Jewish Film Festival this weekend in San Francisco. It'll be at the Castro Theater at 3:55 on Sunday afternoon, and both Judy Blum and Lawrence Blum will be there. They join us for the rest of our hour here on Forum, and we welcome your calls at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum at kqed.org or post your thoughts or comments on our Facebook page. Let's go right to another caller. Kathy joins us first in Orinda. Kathy, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that my daughter, who has worn a back brace for scoliosis for the past 4.5 years, discovered the book Deanie by Judy Blum and read it right in the beginning of what's been a bit of an ordeal. That book has pulled her through not only the beginning and middle of her adolescence, but has had her able to wear that back brace with pride because she's so identified with that character. And I, as a child, identified with the book, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. So we've got a mother-daughter, two generations of girls, you know, identifying with the strong characters in Judy Blum's book, and I want to thank her for that. My daughter has 2 more years of a scoliosis back brace, and she's so proud of being able to wear it through reading Deanie that she's now helping other children who are put into a back brace at a program at the Children's Hospital. I can't thank Judy Blum enough for writing that book and for our local independent bookstore for recommending it.
Kathy, thanks. Thanks for the call.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. I'm so glad to hear that.
I read one article yesterday sort of saying, is Judy Blum too tame for today's teens? And, of course, your books, many of which have been banned at different times, it sounds like, at least from Kathy's point of view, they're still relevant. But you tell a funny story about how you can get kids today to still read your books. You want to give that tip?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what I say to parents at book signings, especially, you know, to mothers who say, oh, I can't wait to give these books to my daughter. I want her to read them. And I say, be very careful, because as soon as you say, I grew up on these books and I love them and I want you to read them, your daughter is going to say, ooh, you are so uncool, Mom. So the best thing to do is get, I'm not trying to make business for myself, but new covers are wonderful. The books have new covers every few years. Get them with new covers. Leave them around the house. And occasionally say, oh, no, you're not ready for that one.
What's your view on that, Lawrence? Do you have a sense of whether or not that today's teens, you said they relate so much to your own growing up. Do you think they still do?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely.
Pre-teens. You know, I just have to clear this up. I never really wrote for teens. Mm. The only two books, Tiger Eyes and Forever, the other books are all preteen. And that was what interested me when I started to write. I was never interested in the teenager I was because it was a 50s teenager. And I thought, oh, the 50s. Although I have to tell you, I'm writing a novel right now and it takes place in the 50s. I don't know. You know, I think it's kind of an adult, older teen audience, but it is from the point of view at the moment, anyway, of 3 50s teenagers.
Jeffrey in San Francisco has our next call. Jeffrey, go ahead.
Good morning. I'm an 8th grade English language arts teacher, and I want to tell you that I use all of Judy Blum's books in my classroom, and I love that my copies of Forever, and then again, maybe I won't, always get stolen. I always put 2 or 3 in the classroom every year, and they always get stolen. Judy, you are the master of the plot line. You're one of the people who can actually stick to the classical exposition, rising action, climax, falling action, and resolution, and you do it so beautifully, and it helps kids who are readers of all ability really sink their teeth into your book. Tiger Eyes is a book that I use a lot, and there is something so universal about Davy's grief. And one thing that my students love about your book, Tiger Eyes, is that none of the adults in that book save Davy. She is the only person. None of those adults have answers. It's Davy and Wolf, the younger people in that book, who have the answers. And as a 47-year-old gay man, I just want to tell you that I was weaned on your books. I love your books, and I'm really, really hoping that one day you'll write a book for gay students. You're a blessing in my life, and I'm going to go off the air and just take care. You're the best.
Jeffrey, thanks.
I think I love you, Jeffrey. Thank you. And what a brave teacher you are, because, you know, in today's world, a lot of teachers are afraid to use books like this in the classroom because one parent waving a book around and complaining to a school board can get a teacher in a lot of trouble. So
Still happen? I know books were banned often in the 80s. Peoria banned three, as I recall, but still happens.
This is ongoing. I work, closely with the National Coalition Against Censorship, not just to protect my books, but so many books. And the interesting thing about it is the censors don't come after a book, those who want to censor. They don't come after a book until they know that kids really like it. If it's popular with kids, it's like there must be something wrong. And those are the books that they come after. And that is ongoing.
I was rewatching Milk on the plane coming out here yesterday, and looking at, historically that witch, Anita Bryant, and that period of time when they were going around trying to damage gay people's rights. And that was sort of the beginning of all of that sort of political grandstanding, coming after, attacking books, trying to censor everything, trying to not let people be who they were, that, Judy's got caught up in so much.
I want to come back also to Jeffrey's point and see if you agree with that, Lawrence, as the person who directed this film, that the characters in that book, the ones who figure it out in the end, are the two young people, mm-hmm. Davey and Wolf, that there isn't a lot of direct guidance that's effective, at least, for many of the parental figures. Is that what you wanted to try to bring out over time, the way in which that process of discovery, of coming of age, and that is something that comes in the end from within Davey?
Yeah, I think so. It was in the book. I don't think I changed. We didn't change that much from the novel, but I think that's an important component of it. I mean, it was certainly clear to me that the adult characters, with the exception of Mr. Ortiz, don't see young people, don't pay attention to the young people, and they have to figure it out for themselves. And not everything's wrapped up neatly in a nice package with a bow at the end. Life goes on. It's not all going to be easy, but it's really, I saw it less about a story about loss than about self-discovery.
And Mr. Ortiz is the father of the character Wolf, the one who Davey is drawn to in the story. And part of it also seems to be this sense, I read for that funny passage from Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, about wanting to believe that you're not alone. And that's part of what Davey discovers in this story as well, that everyone, even the smart girl Jane, who seems to have it all together, that everyone struggles and everyone has loss and discovery to move through.
Yes. If we're lucky, that smart girl Jane,
Elise Eberle.
Elise Eberle, thank you, Larry, will be with us on Sunday.
Oh, great, great. Some emails coming in. Jessica writes, how do you stay connected to the adolescent point of view as an adult writer? Truthfully, at 45, I often feel at times the melodramatic voice in my head that never left junior high. This quality of authenticity is precisely why I adore your work.
I don't think there's any way to explain why some people are connected to the child they were, the adolescence they were. And even now on the street, if I meet a four-year-old, I'm more connected to that four-year-old on the street than I may be to the adults around. I mean, some people are like that. Maurice Sendak always said the same thing. You don't have to have children of your own to be connected to the child you were and the children all around you. It's not a good or bad thing. It's just that some of us are. And I think probably we're the ones who write books about young people because we remember. If you don't remember, you're not going to write about it.
Well, and you also have an extraordinary gift of remembering every detail of your childhood. You could name how many kids in your first grade class could you still name and what they ate and what they wore. I think that's part of it.
Judy Blum and Lawrence Bloom, again, joining us this hour for the screening of the film Tiger Eyes, again, at the Castro Sunday in San Francisco at 3:55. You can join our conversation at 866-733-6786. What is it that you'd like Judy Blum to write about today? Jeffrey mentioned the idea about writing about the struggles of gay adolescents. What else would you like to see Judy Blum write about? You can email us as well at forum@kqed.org. Nancy is next. Nancy, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Judy and Larry. Judy, you and I are the same age, and I know when we were growing up, there was nothing that was written that we could relate to. And I have a 45-year-old daughter, and she absolutely adored your books. They were so important to her, and she and I read them side by side. And she wrote to you, and I remember when she was 12, I let her skip school to come see you at a book reading in San Francisco, and both of us will be there on Sunday.
Oh,
and
that's so wonderful.
Those books were just, they were just so wonderful. And I'm so glad that you wrote them.
Nancy, yeah. I have to say, I'm really impressed that you read those side by side with your daughter. All I ever read was Little House on the Prairie. So congrats for going beyond that.
And talked about them, and they were just so good. And, you know, and it brought us so much closer together to, you know, to discuss these things and these characters. And, yeah, it was
Nancy,
really
thanks.
Important.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. Did you read to each other? And did you read to Larry growing up, Judy Blum? Did you have these kinds of conversations Nancy has just described?
I read to my children. Did we have the conversations? Sometimes, I don't know, the child has to want to have the conversations.
We had one last night over dinner.
I just wanted to say to Nancy that I hope that Nancy and her daughter will come up and tell me who they are, because parents and kids who can talk through books. I always said that I talked to my daughter through books. You know, we shared the same books. She wasn't a talker, but that's how we communicated. Sometimes you can communicate without talking, but, you know, to be there for answering the questions is very, very important.
I remember, I mean, she did leave books around the house. Not like you should read this or I want you to read it, we should read it together, but there were just books around that I eventually
would
sort
of pick
up.
But you were a talker, and you, if you asked me a question, I would like to think that mm-hmm. I always answered it.
Yes.
Honestly and to the point, right?
Yes.
When you were... Sister.
I'm so glad you can work this out.
Huh? Yes, absolutely.
I'm pointing my finger.
You were great.
When you're he has a sister 2 years older. When she had you in the kitchen one morning, she was 4 and you were 2, hatching an egg. She had him sitting on a little egg from the refrigerator, and when he hatched this egg, there would be a baby. And then I knew it was time to get the little book, How Babies Are Made, and we sat with that little book and we talked.
Also impressive that you had that conversation with Larry when he was 2.
No, I was older.
Well,
was
no, older. When you hatched the egg, you were 2. I have to say he didn't actually hatch the egg because...
I'm going to read some emails. I'm just jumping ahead here. Shannon writes in, I read Judy Blum's books as a child and have read Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing, dedicated, by the way, to Larry, to my 6-year-old son. How amazing is it that he and I can relate to Peter and be upset with Fudge's antics. Your books have brought my son and me closer as a result. We are very grateful to you. Was there a lot of sibling rivalry? Is that how much of that story is based on your rivalry with your sister?
Really not. Not really. I mean, I think some of the spirit may be in the characters, but I don't think it's
They
really.
Were very young when I wrote it, but you are looking at the original model for Fudge.
Yeah.
Grown up.
I'm still bad.
Bill in Sebastopol writes, would you consider yourself religious, spiritual, or other? I guess I'm not sure what other means, but religious or spiritual. It's interesting because this film is being shown as part of the Jewish Film Festival, and yet Judaism is not a part of the film, at least.
Well, her father, I mean, it starts at a Jewish funeral, and you know, she does give her father a Hanukkah gift. Mm. It was a mixed marriage. I can't remember even in the book. I think maybe both parents were. I was very into, for a while there, because both my parents are Jewish, what what is it like for a child whose parents are from different religions and say to the child, you know, you can decide what you want to be. I think because back in those days, my brother had married a non-Jew and their children, who were the same ages as my children, didn't know what religion they were. But I would say I'm more spiritual than religious. I mean, being Jewish is a part of me. I always say, yes, it's like having brown eyes. I'm Jewish. And I love to write characters who are Jewish, who have nothing to do with, you know, Holocaust. They're Jews, and they're like anybody else.
Where do your characters come from?
Where do my characters come from? Well, kids always say, where do you get your ideas? You know, and I, a question that used to terrify me, it's like, don't ask me that question. Where do they come from? They come from, I don't know, someplace. You know, I always had this huge imagination. I always invented characters. I practiced the piano when I was a little kid by having a notebook full of invented students. I like to make up people. I was doing that when I was 9 years old.
And do the people then, I'm just curious about whether or not the words and the dialogue come before, or do you create the character and then that character opens up and becomes whoever that character may be?
Well, a character grows slowly through many, many drafts of a book until I really get to know that person. And I know that it's very disappointing to have me here and not have me able to explain how it works. I wish there was an easy answer for it. I hear the dialogue. It just comes. I don't know. This is what I can do. This is my magic. When kids say to me, if you could have a power, what would be your power? I don't know. This is my power. This is something I can do.
Yeah, I don't think that's a disappointing answer at all. I think we always want a formula. You know, we want a way and an answer for how do you do this. But I don't think that's disappointing.
Well, first of all, if you write, you're an observer. So, yes, little bits and pieces come from things you see all the time. I used to remember all these things. Now, if I don't write them down, I don't necessarily remember them. But so every writer pulls and, you know, you mix and match. But also what I'm trying to tell kids now is most of all, it's your imagination. And when I grew up, there was time for a kid to just sit around and watch the clouds and let it roll. Let it roll. Kids today are so programmed, I worry they don't have enough time to do that.
I can add to it, having watched her do this for a long time, it's also an enormous amount of hard work.
Yeah.
I mean, she gets in that room and just works and works and works and works and works. It doesn't just come out a finished, beautifully formed, finished product. It's a lot of imagination, but with editing and tearing things apart and working hard.
But that's really sweet, I just have to tell you, because when you were young, I once said to you, how do you feel about having a working mother? I was like the only working mother then on this little cul-de-sac where we live. And you said, oh, I never think about that because you're always home. You're home when we come home from school. I was home more than the non-working mothers because I worked at home. Mm. And I always thought that was so sweet. I also always thought that I did not stress enough to my own kids when they were growing up that this is very hard work. I thought that I kind of protected them from that.
I remember reading something that you said in another context or in an interview that a lot of people have talent, but what you have to have is determination.
Absolutely.
On that point, Lisa writes in, I've been working on a teen novel about growing up with an alcoholic parent, and I'm struggling with the era. I want to make it current, but technology is evolving so quickly. Girls no longer stay home waiting for the phone to ring. There's a wealth of information exchanged on Facebook. I know my themes, but I'm not sure how to make that tie in to how kids communicate today because it's so different.
Uh-oh. Advice. I would say do it naturally the way it comes to you. And if it comes to you in another time, write it in that time, because the feelings don't change. It's yes, how we communicate, and the electronics have changed, but we worried about that with Tiger Eyes, actually, and I wanted to set it in the 70s.
I didn't really worry about it so much. There's really no it was written years ago, before cell phones and internet and everything. I thought it's an emotional story about characters, and I did not want to bring all of the technology into it. People say, oh, she's in the canyon, she falls down, how come she doesn't just call somebody? Well, okay, she doesn't have a phone, or if she did, she wouldn't get a signal. But I just didn't want that technology to, you know, I don't mean to sound old-fashioned. It just is not really what the story is about, that somebody tweets to somebody else, meet us Friday night. You know, they're together.
Let's take another call. Neil in San Francisco is next. Neil, go ahead.
Yeah, two questions. First, as a mother, what was your opinion of the TV series Malcolm in the Middle? Second, what other writers have inspired you, have served as an inspiration or a spur of any kind?
I was inspired when I started out by Beverly Cleary. She was a huge inspiration to me. I fell off the sofa laughing over her books, and I thought, I want to write books like these that delight the reader, regardless of the age of the reader. And I loved Harriet the Spy by Louise Fitzhugh. There were three books then that meant a lot to me, and also Elaine Konigsberg's first book, which has, oh, it's such a long title, Jennifer Hecate, Macbeth, blah, 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 whatever, and me, Jennifer. I just thought that those were the kinds of books I wanted to write. I was going to the library. I was coming home with armloads of books every day and dividing them into piles. No, I don't want to write books like these because they bore me. Yes, I want to write books like these because they just have it. They're just there. They're just fabulous. You know, again, these people remain my inspiration. Every time I read a good book, and I finished one on the plane yesterday, I am newly inspired. That book was called The Art of Fielding. And I was reading it slowly, slowly, because I didn't want it to end. I didn't want to give it up, because I was really involved. So there's another inspiration. You never stop being inspired by a good book, a good film. It just keeps going. You need that.
Neil, thanks for the call. Wendy writes in, I worked for years as a teacher with high schoolers in alternative public schools. Many of the students came to me with little confidence that they could read a whole book. I would always pull Tiger Eyes off the bookcase and read the first three pages out loud. And they took it home and finished it and understood the characters and the themes. This book was their passport to literature.
And as a teacher, how lucky were those kids to have this teacher who understood, who helped them find something that was going to make them maybe into a reader.
Lawrence, for you in making the film, what sort of passport was it for you? What did you discover in making the film, either about your mom's work or about your own growing up?
Well, I was mostly interested in thinking about this girl's journey, almost in a solitude, that, you know, that she had to go through this process herself. And I thought a lot about loss and pulling yourself back together. I mean, I mean, in some way, I suppose it's personal, but, and it's really, it's not a downer of a movie at all. It's a very kind of uplifting, I hope. But I thought a lot about personal journeys of loss and rediscovery, and how we all do that in our own way. And there are scenes in the movie that, even though we wrote them together, created them, you know, they're still very moving to me, because I think they resonate. Other things in my life are, you know, resonating in those looks on the girl's face or discoveries.
There's a lot of space in the film. There are a lot of times that are quiet or where there's music. Is that coming back to some of what you said a moment ago, Judy Blume, about how in your time, and perhaps that is a more challenging question now, that you need space. You need interior space. You need just space to sort of work your way through those things that are bubbling up inside you at a furious pace when you're a kid.
Well, yes. It's funny because we had to film at such a furious pace, such a furious pace. And I was on the set with Larry every day. He was very generous to me on that set. And I was hoping what he would say that he learned about me was that I could climb up in the canyon. You know, they had those ancient footpaths leading to the top. And if you needed the loo or if you wanted to eat, you had to climb up those snowy, icy steps. And that I could do it with everyone else. I was very proud of myself to do that. But the pace was so furious that I didn't understand that there would be the lovely quiet moments with the music in the film. I think, you know, Larry does music and he chose all the music. And I love the music. I'm crazy for the music.
It's also the landscape, the New Mexico landscape has a certain quality to it that's when you read the book, it's in there. It's very cinematically written. But I always thought those big open expanses and quiet reflective moments in canyons that in my memory of living out there and exploring, that was really important. So they're in the movie. That's why they're in the movie.
What do you hope people come from it with? You mentioned it's not a downer, but what do you hope people?
Well, first I hope people see it. I hope, you know, it's in an age of tentpole action movies of, you know, they want to make movies where you can turn it into a toy or a, you know, this is a naturalistic story about real people going through real things. And I hope it resonates with people emotionally.
Lawrence Bloom, the director and co-screenwriter with his mom, Judy Bloom of Tiger Eyes. It will be on this Sunday as part of the Jewish Film Festival at the Castro Theater in San Francisco at 3:55 in the afternoon. They will be there as well. Judy Bloom, Lawrence Bloom, thanks so much for being part of Forum this morning.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Great to have you with us. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, who was raised by Judy Bloom, along with Vinnie Tong. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, our senior editor, Dan Zoll, our executive producer, Raul Ramirez. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.